Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Ann Ball and Brian Lynn. Later, Ashley and I will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Legos have been a popular toy for children for more than 60 years. When children get older, boxes of plastic Lego bricks often end up unused and stored in out-of-the-way places around the home. Parents sometimes end up throwing the Legos away. Now, the Lego Group Toy Company is testing a program to make sure the unwanted bricks do not go to waste. The program is called Lego Replay. It aims to make sure the unwanted building blocks continue to make children happy. Tim Brooks is the Lego Company's Vice President of Environmental Sustainability. He told VOA, "Nearly all Lego bricks we see that are out there have lots more play value in them. Multi-generations of play value. It's a waste of energy and resources to grind them up and make new bricks." Brooks said the idea came from parents who do not know what to do with the old bricks. "Placing old Legos in waste containers is not a good answer. Birds and other wildlife may try to eat what looks like colorful food with deadly results." With the Lego Replay program, parents load unwanted Legos of all shapes and colors into boxes. Then, they go to the program website and print out a mailing label. The boxes are sent to processing centers where the bricks are sorted, cleaned, and shipped to aid groups and donation centers. Two groups taking part in the test program are Teach for America and the Boys and Girls Clubs of Boston. In the last 2 months, Brooks said, the two groups have received 3,000 boxes of Lego bricks. Users have downloaded about 9,000 shipping labels. Brooks said, the Lego bricks made 60 years ago can still be used as part of a Lego set manufactured just last week. He added, "You can't think of many things you can buy off the shelf today that work exactly with something you bought in the late 1950s. The Lego Replay test program is set to last through March. If it is successful, the program may be expanded to include other Lego products. The Lego Group is also looking at other materials to use in their toys. While plastic has proved to be the strongest material, Lego has begun making some bricks out of sugarcane."
Clothing designers are turning to unusual plants and used materials to make products that better use natural resources. More people are paying closer attention to how the production of clothing affects the environment. However, Some experts say that the idea of buy and throw away still rules when it comes to clothes. This is true, although some famous people support a movement to reuse and recycle clothing. Actress Maggie Q created a line of clothes from recycled fabrics. She is among activists who believe more can be done to waste less. She says she feels sick about fast fashion, low-cost clothes that can be worn once, then thrown away. The British design team, Vin and Omi, looks for creative ways to make the industry more sustainable. Their clothing is worn by former First Lady Michelle Obama and singers Beyoncé and Lady Gaga. The team found latex from Malaysia, but when they discovered the conditions for the work there were bad, they bought the operation. In their office in the English countryside, they grow unusual crops for cloth development. These include chestnuts from trees and horseradish. Their latest line of clothes includes ones made from nettle plants, alpaca hair, and recycled plastic from paint containers. Another English designer, Zoe Corsellis, keeps her carbon footprint low by manufacturing her clothes in London. The cloth comes from the United Kingdom and Germany. She makes the cloth from wood products, sea waste, and something called peace silk. It is considered a better method for silkworms than the traditional silk production process. Belgian designer Sebastian de Nieuwburg is recycling plastic bottles, car parts, and machines used in homes. Plastic waste is collected and torn into small pieces for a 3D printer. Waste, I believe, is design failure, he said. More famous people are also playing a part in the movement. They are buying vintage or old clothes used by people long ago. Others wear a set of clothes more than once. Fee Gilfeather is a sustainability expert with the nonprofit group Oxfam. She said there is hope that more will be done. The textile industry is getting close to working out how to do fiber-to-fiber recycling, she said. Such recycling takes clothes that are no longer wanted or needed and breaks them down into raw materials to make new clothing. She said the industry needs to move faster because carbon emissions from the textile manufacturers are predicted to increase 60% by 2050. Some fast fashion industry leaders, including Zara and H&M stores, have launched clothing take-back plans aimed at recycling old clothes. But for now, recycling and a zero-waste goal is mostly a small part of the worldwide industry. I'm Ann Ball.
America's strongest digital privacy law has taken effect in California. The law, known as the California Consumer Privacy Act, CCPA, requires businesses to inform consumers about the ways in which they collect and share personal information. The law gives consumers the right to request that companies not sell or share their data. It also requires businesses to destroy information already collected if the consumer asks to have it removed. The law covers the sale of data related to almost any sharing of information that can help a business. This includes information sharing between companies as well as the selling of data by third-party businesses. Large online businesses such as Facebook and Google are affected by the law. So are major retail companies. Walmart and Home Depot, among others, say they have added "Do not sell my info" links to their websites to make it easier for consumers to exercise their rights. The businesses said they have also put the information on signs inside their stores. Digital experts say it remains unclear how the CCPA will affect the kind of targeted advertising commonly used by companies like Facebook and Google. Facebook collects large amounts of personal data and uses the information to direct ads at different groups of people. The data could include someone's sex, race, or religion. Facebook says it does not share that kind of personal information with advertisers. The experts say that because the law covers any company that meets conditions for interacting with state residents, the California law might end up serving as a legal model for other states. "If we do this right in California," said California Attorney General Xavier Becerra, "the state will put the capital P back into privacy for all Americans." California's legislation is the nation's biggest effort yet aimed at fighting against so-called surveillance capitalism. This term describes the business of profiting from data that most Americans give up, often unknowingly, in exchange for free and often ad-supported services. In a statement about the CCPA in October, Becerra said that personal data is what is powering today's wealthy digital economy. "It's time we had control over the use of our personal data. That includes keeping it private," he said. Becerra added that he sees the law as a historic step forward in putting the people of California first in the age of the Internet. Some experts have noted that some parts of the law will likely bring legal challenges. One such challenge could center on constitutional concerns related to the many different areas covered by the law. The experts say the law's many exceptions could also be problematic, as well as the fact that it only affects information collected by businesses, not the government. Critics say the law's exceptions permit companies to keep holding personal information on consumers in some situations, even after individuals request that the data be destroyed. For example, a company can keep personal data if it decides it needs it to finish the sales process. A company could also continue to hold information in a way that the consumer would reasonably expect them to. Joseph Jerome is a policy director at the privacy group Common Sense Media Kids Action. He told the Associated Press that the law is more of a right to request and hope for deletion. The law offers stronger protections for children. For example, it bans the sale of data on children under 16 without permission. Digital experts also noted that the law leaves it up to California citizens themselves to exercise their new rights. To make the law effective, consumers will need to take direct action to opt out of data sales or request collected information. Margot Kaminsky is a professor of law at the University of Colorado who studies legal technology issues. She told the AP that many people currently do not take the time to read existing privacy agreements because they are long and complex. Kaminsky said, "If you aren't even reading privacy agreements that you are signing, are you really going to request your data?" I'm Brian Lynn.
And now we present The Making of a Nation. The American nation began to expand west during the middle 1800s. People settled in the great open areas of the Dakotas, Utah, Wyoming, and California. The movement forced the nation to deal with great tribes of Native American Indians. The Indians had lived in the Western territories for hundreds of years. Settlers and cattle ranchers pushed the Indians out of their homelands. The result was a series of wars between the tribes and the federal government.
At first, the United States government had just one policy to deal with the Indians. It was brutal. Whenever settlers wanted Indian land, the tribes were pushed farther west. If the Indians protested or tried to defend their land, they were destroyed with crushing force. By the middle 1800s, almost all the eastern Indians had been moved west of the Mississippi River. They were given land in Indian Territory in what is now the state of Oklahoma. The government described these Indians as civilized. This meant they were too weak to cause more trouble. Many agreed to follow the ways of the United States government.
The Indians of the Western Grasslands were different. They refused to give up their way of life. These Plains Indians were always on the move because they hunted buffalo, the American bison. They followed great groups of the animals across the grassy plains. At that time, there were millions of these animals in the American West. The Indians of the plains depended on the buffalo for almost everything they needed. Many of them were fierce fighters. The Plains Indians did not want settlers crossing their hunting lands. They often tried to destroy the wagon trains carrying settlers to California and Oregon.
The United States Army was given the job of keeping peace. Soldiers were sent to build roads and forts in the Western Plains. They tried to protect the wagon trains from Indian attacks. They tried to keep settlers from invading Indian lands. There were many fights between the soldiers and the Plains Indians. The soldiers had more powerful weapons. They usually won.
Some Plains Indians tried to live peacefully with the settlers. One such group was part of the Sioux tribe, called Santee Sioux. It was the largest and most powerful group in the West. The Santee Sioux lived along the northeastern edge of the Great Plains in what is now the state of Minnesota. They signed treaties with the government, giving up 90% of their land. The Santee agreed to live in a small area. In exchange, the United States agreed to make yearly payments to the tribe. This made it possible for the Indians to buy food and other things from traders.
Trouble started, however, in the summer of 1862. The government was late giving the Indians their yearly payment. As a result, the Indians lacked the money to buy food. Traders refused to give the Indians credit to buy food. One trader said, "If they are hungry, let them eat grass." The Indians were hungry. Soon, their hunger turned to anger. Finally, the local Indian chief called his men together. He gave the orders for war. Early the next morning, the tribe attacked the trading stores. Many of the traders were killed, including the man who had insulted the Indians. He was found with his mouth filled with grass. The governor of Minnesota sent a force of state soldiers to stop the Indian revolt. The soldiers had artillery. They killed several hundred Indians in battle. They hanged several others. Soon, the revolt was over.
Trouble came next to parts of Colorado and Wyoming. This is where the Sioux Indians and the Cheyenne Indians lived. The chief of the Lakota Sioux tribe was named Red Cloud. The Indians fought bitterly to keep settlers out of their hunting grounds. After 2 years of fighting, with many deaths on both sides, the government decided the struggle was too costly. It asked for peace. The Sioux and the Cheyenne agreed. They were given a large area of land north of Wyoming in the Dakota Territory. They also were given the right to use their old hunting lands farther north. The government agreed to close a road used by settlers to cross the hunting grounds. And all soldiers were withdrawn from Sioux country.
The war ended, and peace came to the Sioux and the Cheyenne. With peace came a new United States policy towards Indians of the West. The government decided to put aside an area of land for each tribe. The land was called a reservation. Each tribe would live on its own reservation. Most of the reservations were in Indian Territory in what is now the state of Oklahoma. Other reservations were in Dakota, near the land of the Sioux.
The government believed it would cost less money and fewer lives to keep Indians on reservations. The Indians would be away from possible trouble with settlers. Instead of moving freely over the plains to hunt buffalo, the Indians would live in one place. They would receive food and money from the government. Officials came from Washington to explain this new policy to the Indians. A big meeting was held. Chiefs representing many tribes attended. The chiefs spoke, one after another, to the government officials.
All of the chiefs said they, too, wished to live in peace with the United States government. But many questioned the decision to move to reservations. One who did so was Chief Ten Bears of the Comanche tribe. He said, "There are things which you have said to me that I do not like. You said you wanted to put us on a reservation. You said you would build houses for us. I do not want your houses. I was born on the plains where the wind blows free and there is nothing to break the light of the sun. I was born where everything breathed a free breath. I want to die there, not within walls."
So the government and the Indians reached a compromise. The tribes were given reservations in Indian territory, but they were also given permission to hunt buffalo in a wide area south of the reservations. The Indians agreed to give up all their old lands. They agreed to live in peace on the reservations. In exchange, the United States promised to give the Indians all the food, clothing, and other things they needed. It also promised to give them schools and medical care.
The Indians were not happy with this agreement. They did not want to give up their old ways of living. However, they saw they had no choice. The government was too strong. They waited weeks, then months, for help to move to the new reservations. They could not understand the delay in carrying out the agreement. The delay was in Washington, D.C. Congress could not agree on how much money to spend on the Indians. So the lawmakers refused to approve the agreement. They left the situation unsettled. Again, Indians were forced to watch angrily as settlers began moving on to lands they had agreed to give up. As the settlers moved in, the buffalo and other animals left. The Indians had difficulty finding food.
Soldiers shared their food with the Indians. It was not enough. Western officials sent urgent messages to Washington asking for supplies for the Indians. No supplies could be sent until Congress approved the money to buy them. As before, some of the Indians became angry and refused to wait any longer. Their anger led to new fighting. In the end, it was a fight that failed to win back their land. And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
This is